assume one of your main goals is how to make this content relevant today or help students understand that it's relevant.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that?
We talk a lot about equity and diversity. We talk about what were the conditions that created something like that. We look at other aspects in history, genocides in particularly. We bring the pyramid of hate into the awareness of teachers and students.
What is that?
The pyramid of hate is quite an interesting graphic to study by the Anti-Defamation League. And we talk about the fact that many social scientists have researched what brings a group of people, a culture that is, let's say, the German culture were actually extremely forward and extremely educated. Why did that happen in Germany? And what we see is really that at the base of the pyramid, and this is what students are well aware, this is happening in schools across our country and the world. And those are the name-calling, the ethnic jokes, the beginning, the underlying tones of bullying. And then we move on to the scapegoating. What does that mean to scapegoat and start to dehumanize or lessen the humanity of others? We move on to the segregation aspect of it, the ghettoizing, the shunning aside. And we know that students are well aware of what happens in the lunchroom, who sits with whom, who doesn't sit with anybody at all. We talk about the violence that can come from that. And then finally, the top rung of the pyramid is where genocide, Holocaust, organized murder, ethnic cleansing, whatever you want to call it, comes to the forefront.
Well, Narit, I don't know if we can have this conversation without talking about the fact that several Jewish centers across the country, including one in Las Vegas, mm-hmm. have received bomb threats mm-hmm. recently.
Yes.
How does that news inform what you're doing?
I was actually thinking about this recently. I thought about what's my level of concern? Am I scared? And I think I'm not scared. I think I'm rather angry. So
why aren't you scared?
Because I think as a child of Holocaust survivors, I was taught and I was raised not to allow victimization. So I don't feel victimized by it. I'm angry. But I think mostly what I want is communities to be aware of what it feels like. Minorities know what it feels like. Bigotry is an institutionalized kind of a thing. If we're not vigilant, the exclusion of others, the scapegoating of the reason we're in this situation, quote unquote, is because of them, whoever the targeted group is, you know. Now, during the Holocaust, it was Jews. I mean, we're seeing some pockets of anti-Semitism in our country, sadly. But it's not something in a vacuum. We're constantly seeing these things. We see many communities being ostracized. You know, we're no longer in the first, on the base of the pyramid. We're now in the second rung of the pyramid when we're trying to go beyond stereotype.
Narit, you have a personal connection to the Holocaust.
Yes.
Would you mind sharing your family's story and how you talk about it with the students you work with?
I grew up in Israel, with so many of my peers being second generation. And second generation means that our parents were Holocaust survivors. And I talk about my maternal grandmother specifically, who survived through some incredible hardships and adversity. She escaped the Nazis from Poland in 1939 with my grandfather and her brother, but they were caught crossing the border. And my grandmother, who was then pregnant with my mother, ended up being not the sole survivor, but one of two survivors of her family, including my mother. And that's why I'm here, because of my grandmother's fortitude and what she used to say choices.
We don't always talk about the challenges that are facing second-generation survivors. Mm-hmm. What's one thing you wish people understood about that experience?
The idea of not having food in the refrigerator is frightening to me. It's not going to be like, oh, that's okay, I'll go shopping tomorrow and get some food. The idea of not having food is frightening. The idea that you need a skill in order to survive, and a skill that people would value, that higher ups would somehow value, is rather important. It was important to my parents when I told them I was going to be a teacher. They did not really like that. They expected a more valued skill, like being able to work with your hands, having a skill to build something, because we know that academia was one of the first people to go. And my grandmother said that the reason she survived was because her father owned a haberdashery. So she knew how to sew and she knew how to knit beautifully. And when she was in prison, she would tell the prison guards, if you bring me wool, I could knit whatever you want.
I'm just going to make sure I understand this. You're saying those skills that were valued in a concentration camp have literally shaped how second generation people live their lives. And like the fear of having an empty fridge is because of starvation in those camps?
Yeah, I think so. Wow. I still remember that my father, till the day he died, if he wasn't aware of how he was sitting at the table, his left hand would always cover the plate, if you can imagine. The left hand is hugging the plate while the right hand is eating. It became innate in him. You don't think of that, but those were some of the traumatic, I guess, we call it now PTSD. And I have to think the first generation, those who survived, suffered a great deal of PTSD. And I had wonderful parents. Well, I had an amazing childhood. But I recall that some other children did not have such an amazing childhood because parents and grandparents did not have that wherewithal. I mean, it all depends where their development was stunted due to their experiences. How old were you when this occurred? Mm-hmm. And how do you come out of it being able to care for others?
Nurit Stites, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.